So we're seeing a real deterioration of the day-to-day life for the majority of the Haitians. And on top of that, a very active confrontation between the gangs and the state.
Welcome to Global Dispatches, a podcast for the foreign policy and global development communities and anyone who wants a deeper understanding of what is driving events in the world today. I'm your host, Mark Leon Goldberg. I am a veteran international affairs journalist and the editor of UN Dispatch. Enjoy the show. Looking for a trustworthy podcast to bring you unfiltered viewpoints and experiences on global health? Tune into Global Health Matters, the podcast that connects silos and amplifies diverse voices to give you a holistic picture. Each month, Dr. Gary Aslanian from the World Health Organization hosts discussions with guests spanning former ministers of health, award-winning journalists and authors, and frontline public health workers. Join listeners from across 180 countries for an exciting season 4, launching in June. Global Health Matters is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. The security and humanitarian situation in Haiti has gone from bad to worse over the last several days. The country had been in a state of perpetual crisis since the 2021 assassination of President Jovenel Moïse. The unelected Prime Minister, Ariel Henry, assumed power following that assassination and refused to hold elections. Meanwhile, gang violence had run rampant. Things got so bad last year that the United Nations Security Council authorized a so-called multinational security support mission in which a contingent of foreign police officers to be led by Kenya would deploy to Haiti to take on the gangs. With that mission struggling to get off the ground, Ariel Henry flew to Nairobi, Kenya. However, upon his return, his plane was prevented from landing back in Port-au-Prince when gangs stormed the airport. He has not been back in the country since. Meanwhile, rival gangs have formed an alliance and are jointly taking on the Haitian National Police. Amid this turmoil, Ariel Henry agreed to step down as prime minister and hand power over to a transitional council. My guest today, Renata Segura, is the deputy director for Latin America and the Caribbean at the International Crisis Group. She gives an excellent explanation for the recent surge in violence and offers some key insights into where this crisis may be headed next. And we, of course, discuss various policy solutions to this major security and humanitarian catastrophe. The situation on the ground in Haiti is obviously evolving very quickly, but this conversation will give you really helpful background and context for understanding the situation as it evolves. I learned a lot from this episode. I know you will too. As always, please feel free to reach out to me. You can use the contact button on globaldispatches.org. If you have a question for me or a recommendation, I always love hearing from you. And please do become a premium subscriber and help support the show. We rely on listener support to keep on keeping on. You can support the show directly in the Apple Podcast app by upgrading your subscription, going to patreon.com/globaldispatches. Or directly on globaldispatches.org. Thank you for your support. Now, here is my conversation with Renata Segura of the International Crisis Group. So, Renata, Ariel Henry has stated his intention to resign and turn power to a transitional council. What do we know about the composition of this council and the powers that it will hold?
Yeah, so the CARICOM meeting, which is the Caribbean countries regional organization that happened a few days ago in Jamaica, and also had participation from the US, from the UN, from Brazil, and from many Haitian counterparts, came up with this idea to have a presidential council that has 7 members, and then also to have that council appoint a prime minister that would replace Henry. So the agreement has been that once the names of the people in the council have been settled, then Henry would renounce.
How much of this was like Antony Blinken's idea? Because he kind of, you know, famously swooped into that CARICOM meeting and seemed to really kind of lay the hammer down.
I mean, there has been a political negotiation, or I should say multiple political negotiations, happening in Haiti for the last 2.5 years, really. And this model of having a presidential transitional council and a prime minister has always been on the table. So there's no surprises here. The main fighting within Haiti until now had been how big that presidential council was going to be and who in the political and civil society groups would have a seat at the council. And obviously a key part of this composition of the transitional government is that who's going to be the prime minister. And so before the upheaval of last week began, there had been a very similar model that was being discussed, but Montana and others in the opposition had refused to let Henry continue to be the prime minister.
And I'll just have to stop you there. Montana, it refers to like a coalition of civil society groups, if I'm not mistaken, that's been kind of pushing for a more democratic transition in Haiti.
Exactly. So from the beginning of the crisis that was triggered by the assassination of President Jovenel Moïse, a group of people under this name, the Montana Agreement, had been pushing for a what they called a Haitian-led solution that really took Henry out of power, because they argued that he was connected with the people who were behind the assassination of Moïse and other political actors, particularly the PHTK, the political party that had been in power recently, who they say were corrupt and had links to organized crime and should be removed out of power.
Basically, this idea of a transitional council, it didn't come out of nowhere. It's been, you know, circulating for quite a while, but now it seemingly is going to happen. Like, if you had to guess who might be part of it, what kinds of people might be part of it, I should say.
So we actually don't have to guess who the organizations are, because that was established by the agreement. But yet we don't have the names. So the council has a composition that mixes both civil society, private sector, and political groups. So one is called the Collective of Political Parties of January 30th, which is an alliance of parties that include PHTK, the party of former President Michel Martelly. Then we also have a representative from the December 21 agreement. That is an agreement that Henry had signed on December 21 of 2022, that had a bunch of allies of Henry. It was like an attempt to make sort of a wider, more a consensual government, but it represents, you know, not a quite a giant part of civil society or politics. Then we also have a group that is called as the Compromis Historique, which is led by Claude Joseph, who used to be the foreign minister and was actually the prime minister at the moment of the assassination of Jovenel Moïse. We should note that he has been indicted together with Moïse's widow in the assassination of the president. We also have Famille Lavalas, which is a political party of former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, which is a party that continues having quite a bit of popularity in Haiti. And then we have the Montana Accord, which is this group of civil society people that signed an agreement in August of 2021, right after the assassination of Moïse, that was presenting path forward, but that really had no sort of constitutional mandate to take power. And there's Pétain de Saline, which is actually a very important one to note, because it is the party of former senator and presidential candidate Jean-Charles Moïse. And Jean-Charles Moïse, not the murdered Moïse.
A different Moïse.
A different Moïse, exactly. He has quite close links to Guy Philippe. He is somebody who was just returned from the US after serving a jail sentencing for money laundering and who has become a very complicated figure in Haitian politics. And then finally, there's also a seat in this council for the private sector, which includes various businesses and chambers, such as the Chamber of Commerce. So in the last few days, several of those groups have managed to come up with names to put forward for the composition of the presidential council, but there are still some that are having trouble. In particular, that one that I mentioned recently, the Petin de Saline, who has now rejected the proposal that came out of Jamaica.
I mean, it sounds, though, as you're describing it, it's like a broadly representative transitional council, which I suppose should be a good thing. What's next for the council? I mean, things seem to be moving like at a very rapid clip. So what should we be looking towards next that would perhaps make good on the promise of Ariel Henry to resign?
I mean, so if we're being optimistic, we're going to hope that the issues that both the Petite Saline party and also the 21 December agreement have been having in these last few days, unable to agree on a name to put forward or even to be part of, will not bring the whole process at a halt. And if they decide to remove themselves from the presidential council, either somebody else will be appointed or it will be a smaller council. And ideally then that group, the presidential council, will get together and appoint a prime minister. If that happens, then essentially we will have a green light for the Kenyan government to send the military police that is going to be the core of the multinational support mission that is supposed to come to Haiti to support the police in fighting the gangs and will be an essential actor in really reducing the tremendous levels of violence that we have been seeing in Port-au-Prince in the last week and a half.
Well, so I wanted to turn to that tremendous and escalating violence in Port-au-Prince. So, you know, Haiti has been in a state of perpetual crisis for the last 3 years since the assassination of Jovenel Moïse, the former president. Ariel Henry was widely seen as illegitimate and gangs had run rampant. That has essentially been like the state of play for quite some time. At least, you know, the last time you and I spoke in October, that was certainly the case. Why have things gotten so dramatically worse and so quickly just in the last week or two?
Well, what we have seen is a really radical transformation of the dynamics of violence, because since the assassination of Moïse and until really just a week and a half ago, what we were seeing was fights between the gangs, right? For a lot of these gangs, what they're searching for is control more and more territory because they make money out of controlling territory. They really either extort or kidnap, or they use the territory that they control to move people that have been kidnapped elsewhere. And so this is the dynamic that we had seen, fights between the G9 and the GPEP and the smaller gangs and civilians more or less in the middle of that confrontation, with the Haitian National Police being able very marginally to calm things down when things were happening. What we have seen happening since the past weekend is that the gangs have, maybe saying a coalition is a little bit too strong, but they have decided to move on a non-aggression pact and actually coordinate simultaneous attacks against state institutions and key infrastructure. And we are talking about police stations. We're talking about the airport, very importantly and crucially, because that meant that Henry was not able to return to the country. He was in Nairobi at the time of the upheaval, and all international flights have been canceled. And also, they took over the two biggest jails and liberated almost 5,000 people, many of whom were former gangs. So the numbers in these groups have just increasingly grown since the upheaval has been happening. And it has also meant that what was already a very dire humanitarian emergency has just become much worse. The majority of Haitians have been stuck inside of their houses because the battles outside are so dramatic and people are afraid for understandable reasons to leave the house. That has meant that they have not been able to get gasoline, which in Haiti is an essential component for your life because a lot of houses don't have electric service. So they depend on plants that run on gasoline for both electricity, but also for potable water. So people have been inside without electricity and without water and really using the food that they had at home. Markets have been mostly closed. Those that have opened, the prices are super high and out of control. And a lot of the food that would have been distributed to markets have not been able to get there because the gangs are controlling so much of the roads in Port-au-Prince. So we're seeing a real deterioration of the day-to-day life for the majority of the Haitians. And on top of that, a very active confrontation between the gangs and the state, which was not the biggest thing before.
Well, so if the gangs essentially, you know, put their disagreements aside and decided to fight the state, and that's essentially what has driven this escalating violence over the last couple of weeks. Has that sort of gang alliance changed at all since the CARICOM agreement and Henri's announcement that he would resign following the creation of this transitional council?
Not really. It hasn't. You know, Cherissier, who's not by any means the strongest gang leader, but has become sort of the public face because he's the one that interfaces with the media.
And you're referring to Jimmy, quote, barbecue Cherissier, one of the key gang leaders.
Yes, exactly. The leader of the G9 coalition who has his own gang. He had said that they were demanding the resignation of Henri. However, once the news came out of Jamaica, he very promptly said that they would not be accepting any government that was imposed by this foreign conversation happening in a CARICOM setting, and that they would only agree to a prime minister that had been chosen, he said, by the people and by Vive Ensemble, which is the name of this sort of coalition of sorts that we are seeing.
Vive Ensemble, like live together?
Yes, exactly. Live together. Now, what we have seen in the last day and a half, though, is a little bit of the quieting of the violence in Port-au-Prince. And it is interesting to wonder why this is. And there are a couple of reasons. One is that, you know, the gangs seem incredibly powerful, but we have to note that they really have not faced much resistance, right, from any kind of serious security actor, because the Haitian National Police is extremely weak. So it might be that they're reaching the top of their capacity of action right now.
There's like no one else to fight. They already won, sort of thing.
Exactly. So we don't know, like, why are they not fully taking over the presidential palace? Why they have not fully taken over the airports, which are still in control of the police, but are surrounded. And it's clear that the gangs could move and take over, but they haven't. So one of the questions is, like, maybe they have reached the maximum capacity. Maybe they have all of their men out and this is as much as they can do. But perhaps another option, which is more likely, is that they're also being careful about not overplaying their hand. This coordinated upheaval was very much a message to the Kenyans and to others that have been volunteering to send troops into the mission. We should know that this is supposed to be a police mission, not a military mission. But all those countries that were going to contribute with officers, it's clearly a message that they're sending them, being like, this is not going to be easy. Don't send your people.
So really, it's in part can be interpreted as a way to deter Kenya, which frankly had already been skittish about sending its police to Port-au-Prince, from doing so at all.
Absolutely. I think we have no doubt that that was the main reason. And the fact that it was an attack that was coordinated to take place at the moment that Henri was signing the agreement with Ruto.
And that's William Ruto, the president of Kenya.
Exactly. But that said, I think the gangs are also aware that even though the United States has said very clearly and in multiple times that they are not going to deploy troops themselves. We know that Washington being engaged in a presidential campaign this year, there is very little appetite for any kind of direct military engagement. I think the gangs also know that if things were to get really, really bad and suddenly boatloads of Haitians were arriving to the coast of Florida, then something could significantly change. And so I think they're sending a message, but they're also trying to be cautious and not make the situation so desperate that the US or somebody else felt compelled to send troops themselves. It's a careful game that they are playing.
What do you see as next for this international police support mission? You know, last time you and I spoke, I believe it was in October, it was not long after the Security Council authorized this mission after Kenya volunteered to take the lead. Other countries as well volunteered some troops, but it was intended to be mostly Kenyan. That mission has not gotten off the ground, I think, for a variety of reasons. Is there any hope or expectation that a multinational support mission might actually end up in Port-au-Prince in Haiti anytime soon? And what will it take to get there?
I mean, all the signaling that is coming out of Kenya is that they continue to be committed to the mission, that they understand the importance of it, and that they want to move ahead. However, they are absolutely understandably being careful about what situation they're sending their men into and making sure both that they have a government that is a counterpart. I think Kenya is rightly very worried about how they will be received once they land in Haiti. And I think that was a big concern when Henry was still in power, mm-hmm. because they didn't want to be seen as actually the ones supporting what was seen as an illegitimate government.
And frankly, that was the big upshot of the last time you and I spoke. That was my key takeaway, that like the key challenge of that mission was how do you restore security but not be seen as upholding the illegitimate government of Ariel Henry, which no like Haitian really supported.
Exactly. So if this transitional council does get up and running and they are able to find a common candidate that they like and they choose as a prime minister, then at least that problem is sort of resolved, right? Like they would have both a more consensus governance structure, which is what many of us have been calling for in Haiti for a long, long time. And then they would also have a counterpart, because purely on the practicalities of having a mission there, you know, you need a working government that you can be interacting with. So that's sort of, let's say, moving slowly and with hiccups, but we're hoping moving. The second problem is the change in the security situation, right? And even, is it going to be safe for them to even land? Would their planes be shut down as they approach Port-au-Prince? In the CARICOM meeting at the end, it was discussed what was phrased something as like a bridging security mechanism. There's very little clarity about what that would mean. And as we were discussing before, there seems to be little appetite for the Marines to be sent. But it does seem that it's pretty clear that there's going to be some sort of more security apparatus strategy that allows the Kenyans to get on the ground and to establish the mission and really start operating. I mean, at this point, it really is anybody's guess of what that would be. What we have been hearing, particularly from some sources in Washington, is that US military contractors might be the key to do that. We know, however, that there are some Marines that are in Port-au-Prince that were sent to help with the evacuation of the non-essential personnel at the US embassy. So there are already some US forces on the ground. So I am imagining something of that sort is being cooked to allow the Kenyans to feel a little bit more secure in getting there.
But we're not talking about like days or weeks. I mean, what do you suspect the timeline would be for Kenyans to deploy if they end up deploying?
I mean, we don't have much more than weeks. I mean, the reality is that if the mission doesn't materialize soon, or there's any sort of other intervention, we're going to have the gangs completely running over Port-au-Prince in its entirety fairly soon. I mean, they already were controlling 80% before. We know that right now they have established control of the coast and sort of the areas around the city, and they're trying to move towards the center where the buildings that the government uses and all that are, like, the more sort of historical part of Port-au-Prince. So unfortunately, the clock is ticking. I mean, honestly, the clock has been ticking for a very long time, and it's been really terrible that both the UN took so long before the mission took shape, but also it's been terribly damaging that the Haitian themselves had not been able to put forward a plan in which most of them agreed for what would be the governance structure that moved them forward into the next stage. And right now, really, we don't have that much time before this, you know, failed state has become sort of like an empty word at this point, but we're looking with something that is very close to that. And in a couple of weeks, we could be seeing a fully failed state.
I mean, is there any momentum or ideas around potentially, like, integrating the gangs, like, politically in a way that might reduce their incentives to continue taking up arms?
Yeah, so that is a very important but complicated question. So part of the agreement that came out of the Jamaica meeting, one of the conditions for people sitting in the council is that they could not have been convicted for a crime, nor they could be accused of a crime, nor they could be in the sanctions list. So that obviously makes it very difficult for any of the gang members to be part of the transitional council. In reality, I think politically that would have been very unfeasible. I don't think civil society would have been game at all to sit at the negotiating table in terms of governance with Barbecue or anybody else, and nor would the US and others in the international community be okay with that. So I think that's a closed door, even though I think some of the gangs were hoping that something of that sort would happen. However, I mean, I think we also all understand that with the amount of people that are in the gangs and with the power that they have, a purely military strategy is not going to be sufficient. And there's going to need to be some discussions. I mean, we had presented that idea when we published our latest report on Haiti in January, in which we really highlighted the importance of continue talking with those social leaders, people in the communities who have access to gangs. They are not members of the gangs, but these are the people that have been negotiating humanitarian corridors when the situation has been terrible, right? Who has been negotiating, allowing people who wanted to move to other parts of the city to be allowed to get out, even in and out during the same day, which is something that some gangs don't allow. So we have those people in the communities, and they need to A, be protected, but B, they need to be very wisely utilized to open channels of communication. And I think this is where Guy Philippe really comes as an important actor.
I'm glad you brought up Guy Philippe, because I did not want to let that hanging. He seems to be like half a gangster. So please do explain.
Yeah, like probably more than half a gangster, but yeah, that's definitely
half politician, half gangster.
Yes, exactly. I mean, so Guy Philippe was a member of the security forces. He was a key actor in the coup against Aristide 20 years ago, and then had been in jail in the US for money laundering, and he was repatriated at really the worst possible time in which he could have been repatriated. And he has the support both of some very important politicians, such as Moïse, the one that we were talking, who's part of the Transitional Council. But also, importantly, he has A, the support of this kind of funny institution is called the BZAP. They are an arm actor, but they are part of the state. They're part of an environmental agency, but they have, you know, state-provided weapons. And they have been very supportive of Philippe in the past. But also, very importantly, he has quite close links with the gangs. And so I think he's going to become an instrumental person to use as a channel of negotiation with the gangs in order to lower violence, particularly against the communities, which we think needs to be the first priority right now. The thing is that if you speak to the Haitians and you say, how about negotiating with the gangs? The answer will be a resolute no. Haiti has gone to hell and back several times in the last few years. People are extremely angry at the gangs. They resent them for the horrors that they had to live. You know, we have to note that violence against children, sexual violence against women, but also boys, all kinds of horrors that Haitians have had to see. And there is very little appetite of sitting at a negotiating table. And I think there will be very little appetite to make them be part of the government. Simultaneously, however, I really don't see how we can avoid having some sort of negotiation with them to quiet things down. That might have to be done discreetly and in limited ways. Our hope is that when the mission arrives and or this bridge security mechanism that is being discussed, it will come with such strength, it will have such clear military power over the gangs that it will work as a deterrent, and that people in the gangs, maybe not Barbecue or the more notorious leaders, but the more basic combatants, many of them very young men, often children who have just joined because they have no other option, would say, okay, no, this is not interesting. And we should note that in the last 2 days, because the Marines had been there evacuating the American embassy, there has been overflights of helicopters over Port-au-Prince, and that, people tell us, has helped very much quiet things down. Mm-hmm. We have heard consistently for the last 2 years that aerial power would really intimidate the gangs and that many of them would just quiet down. So hopefully something of the sort could be done to at least minimize the first impact. Obviously, the challenge at the long term is to not repeat what happened after MINUSTA left Haiti, right? MINUSTA was, despite obviously the terrible issue with cholera and with the impregnation of girls by the Blue Helmets, it did bring gang violence down. But as we have now seen, the gangs didn't really demobilize, the structures remained, they just went quiet for a while. And once MINUSTA left, they came back up more powerful. So we can't allow this to happen again, right? Like, it would be crazy to go through all these efforts to just have the gangs go underground momentarily and then resurface. And I think it's been very important that now the links between the elites and the gangs have been made very clear, that the sanctions have been working to weaken those ties even more. But there needs to be a strategy to really make these structures go away permanently. It's going to be very difficult, obviously, in a country with the levels of poverty that Haiti has, where Haitians have very few opportunities to make decent livelihoods by legal means. There's a lot of root causes, challenges, let's just call it that, to really transform society in Haiti. But it needs to be the goal. The goal can't just be like, oh, let's just quiet this down and eventually have elections and then be in the same place in 5 or 10 years again.
But it does seem, based on all you've been saying, that there is just real urgency right now to getting that Kenyan-led mission on the ground and doing so as soon as possible.
It really is very urgent. And honestly, because of the amount of work that has been put behind it, it would be the best solution. You know, there's been a lot of work by the US, the UN, and others supporting the mission to make sure that the police that would come would be trained, make sure that they will have strategies in place to minimize civilian harm, that this is done. There's going to be violence and it's going to be unavoidable, but at least that the mission comes as cautiously as possible to not harm civilians in Haiti. I think sending contractors or something of the sort could be problematic. You know, we've seen how that has worked in other places of the world, but the reality is that the situation is incredibly dire. And so if the mission doesn't move fast enough, I think that the situation could deteriorate enough that it will prompt another country to send troops.
Renata, thank you so much for your time and for your analysis. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me again.
Thanks for listening to Global Dispatches. The show is produced by me, Mark Leon Goldberg. It is edited and mixed by Levi Sharp. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, make sure to follow the show and enable automatic downloads to get new episodes as soon as they're released. On Spotify, tap the bell icon to get a notification when we publish new episodes. And of course, please visit globaldispatches.org to get on our free mailing list, get in touch with me, and access our full archive. Thank you.